time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Hey guys, happy Tuesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. We got Paul Gallant. We got Sean Mapes behind the glass producing as always. We are Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Hope everybody had a good long weekend, obviously celebrating Memorial Day. And we certainly thank those who have served. We know we have some that listen, so we thank you genuinely. How was your weekend, Paul?
Long. How was your weekend? Your second straight weekend in Indianapolis for the Indy 500, which I'm sure has another event next weekend, too.
It was, IndyCar, the season continues. It's not just one race.
So did that just start the season or something?
No, it's like middle of the season.
Okay.
But the Indy 500 is the biggest race of the year. So, like, if you ask drivers, would they rather win the IndyCar championship or the Indy 500, they would say the Indy 500 because it's that big of a deal. But yeah, it was a great weekend. Marcus Ericsson from Sweden, Chip Ganassi Racing.
Oh, they let won. Swedes play? Come on.
This is a diverse race series. Maybe not as diverse as Formula One, but, Elio Castroneves, Tony Kanaan.
How did Dale Earnhardt Jr. do?
Well, he was in the booth calling.
He wasn't racing? Okay.
He has not raced.
Has he ever done Indy 500 IndyCar racing?
It was a great race.
I know so much about racing.
You do. This was the guy, by the way, guys, last week that asked me if this was the time that they did the milk ceremony.
Yeah, like the holy milk.
The holy milk.
Well, I figured...
Fast Friday.
No, okay. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So it did take place, though. Were you there for it?
For the milk?
Yeah.
Yeah, the winner drinks milk.
Oh.
The guy that wins the race drinks milk.
Well, while I continue to sound like a complete idiot asking you questions, what is the coolest thing about the Indy 500 that nobody knows about?
Okay, good question. I would say I think people know, obviously, it's Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
But what's really special is all the pageantry beforehand. So there's a really famous song that Jim Nabors of Andy Griffith's show used to sing, Back Home Again in Indiana. And if you're familiar with the Kentucky Derby, it's kind of like my old Kentucky home, is I believe what it's called.
Okay.
But they do a lot of flyovers. They have veterans there. They honor, honor all of the troops individually. They take laps around the track. So the Indy 500 is obviously known to be a really great and intense race, but all of the patriotism and the salute to service that is before the race is genuinely really cool. And of course, it's very America, right? You have people in the jean shorts and cut off t-shirts in the infield and in the snake pit, but it's fun.
I wore my American flag Hawaiian shirt this weekend.
I'm sure
I am
did.
Really disgusted to find out a Swede won it. But is there a place to get, you know, have fun?
Yes, there is. There is. Okay, so this is where you would go if you were there.
Yeah.
There is an area called the Snake Pit.
The Snake Pit.
The Snake Pit is just Google Snake Pit Indy 500 and you will see all of the pictures.
You showed me some before the show and I have some FOMO over
this.
It's
debauchery. There's a lot of bodily fluid.
There's
a lot of drugs. There's a lot of
we wouldn't do that here.
People passing out from dehydration. And there are paramedics on standby. There's porta potties. There's really not a lot of cell phone service. And there's a full DJ during the race.
So this is like the infield at the Kentucky Derby kind of vibe like that?
Exactly. Okay. Only the full DJ effect and all of that. There are big screens and people in the snake pit do watch the race for maybe the last three laps to see who wins.
That's what I would do.
If they can survive. There's also There's also the Coke lot. The Coke lot.
Coca-Cola?
It is Coca-Cola, but it's not really known for Coca-Cola anymore.
I was wondering if there was like a sponsored lot or a nicknamed lot.
It used to be sponsored by Coca-Cola. Might still be, but people have
now
taken...
It's sponsored by...
Coke, yeah.
Okay.
A lot of debauchery there. So it's truly an event. It's something that I think everybody should do at least once. I feel the same way about the Derby. I feel the same way about the Daytona 500. Regardless of whether you like racing as a sport, those marquee events I think are cool for everybody to do once.
Okay.
And experience.
Next year as a show.
It's happening.
Mr. Gao, we would love to go. Let's have the shows from there. And I will totally behave.
But
you can trust me.
But Paul, Snake Pit would be your vibe.
Okay.
All right. Ask Astros played this weekend as well. And we saw a couple of great plays, a couple of great moments for sure. Let's listen to some of them.
Mount Davis did not exist.
Holy. Oh, my goodness. This is crushed way up there towards Mount Davis. Off the facade of the second deck. Yordan Alvarez.
I do like it when Todd...
He gets so excited.
Has a Toddgasm. It's like Gus Johnson. Whoa! He puts a little extra mustard on the absolute bombs that Yordan Alvarez smacks. So that sounded fantastic.
I know that I'm a little bit hashtag biased, but those two are such a great broadcast team, because then Jeff will have his little comment that he puts in there too, and Todd is just...
Add a little snark.
Just raving about this moment. But Yordan Alvarez, monster home run, a 470-foot homer against Blackburn. This is the same pitcher, if you remember back in 2019, when they painted the seat orange, the same pitcher he sent into the top deck of the stadium, Minute Maid Park, in 2019. So
this guy gives up absolute bombs.
Yes, so Yordan really likes this guy. But this was an awesome thing to see, and it's just basically Yordan being Yordan.
It's a great way to wrap up the long weekend where Yordan gets two home runs, because he hadn't been hitting many home runs of late. Over the last couple of weeks, he and Kyle Tucker had their fair share of struggles. And, you know, it goes back to a constant theme of the season thus far, Vanessa, is that the offense has really been having a tough time producing runs. They are below average when it comes to the amount of runs that they score per game. They have weirdly been worst in baseball in just about every single offensive statistic when it comes to having runners on first and second. For some reason, they are literally the worst in baseball when they are faced with that situation, and it's led to them not being able to score runs. So then when you see something like over the weekend where, you know, my boo thing, you know, is coming up to take on the Astros, and they're wearing their teal and they're looking real hot, you know, when they take down Verlander.
I had no idea what was going on your Twitter when you were like, that teal's looking real good on you, baby. Listen, who is Paul tweeting about? Did he see a hot girl at the bar?
No. The Astros were playing the Mariners, and the Mariners were wearing teal. I like the teal Mariners look, just like I like the orange Astros look. I think the Astros should always wear orange. I think the Mariners should always wear teal.
Teal Mariners is a good look.
So Verlander got smacked for 6 runs on Friday. Okay, no big deal, right? It's one game. Verlander's been so awesome this season. That was bound to happen at some point. But then on Saturday, they get just shelled again. And you're like, wait, so they've scored in this series against Seattle 3 runs in a series that they avoided the sweep? The offense continues to be this, and look, I know that we're hearing the right things from guys like Alex Bregman, who on Saturday, after another shaky performance by the Astros offense, had this to say. Here is the Astros third baseman.
Tomorrow's another day. Bounce back. Keep getting after it. Long season. We'll get going. I'm very confident in that, and you know, guys on this offense have a track record of being very good. So I'm very confident in the work that we're putting in every day, and it's going to pay off.
It's a lot of deja vu, Vanessa. I feel like we've heard him say the exact same thing already this year.
Great with media, great guy. But if you remember 2 weeks ago when he was in that slump, the soundbite was him saying, I'm pretty good at baseball. I think I'm pretty good at it. So I'll figure it out. To his credit, he did. But Bregman is the most even-keeled, I think, of every single Astros player that I interview. So you're not going to get the ups and downs. You're not going to get the emotional interview interview from him.
At the beginning of that, though, doesn't that sound like a man who's just like, I mean, I don't really know what else to say. So here are a ton of cliches in a row. Like, long season, and we're working really hard. You know, we think we're going to figure it out.
Gym rats, first guy in, last guy out.
Yeah.
The cliche bell could be rung.
At some point, you are what you are. And, I mean, look, I don't think it's worth pressing the panic button over. It's not like they're the worst offense in baseball or anything like that. But they continuously have these stretches where the bats do not come anywhere close to matching the starting pitching. The starting pitching has been incredible. And I feel like it is more likely for the starting pitching to come back to earth than it is for the Astros offense to stay like this. But at the same time, hey, let's get a little more. So I don't know. I know that over the weekend, Vanessa, it's a long weekend, we had 2 or 3 think pieces about the Astros struggles. We had one from Brian McTaggart. I know Chandler Rome in the Chronicle, he put together 2.
One of the suggestions was, okay, maybe moving Jeremy Peña, who's been batting seventh for the most part this year, into the five spot, swapping him with Yuli Gurriel, who's really off to a rough start. Whatever the case, it's I just want people to be aware that it needs to be better, and I'm hoping that people upstairs are at the very least thinking about possibilities at the trade deadline as far as maybe some additions that the Astros can make to their lineup, because I think they're going to need to get over the hump, especially with the way New York's been playing to open up the year.
Framber Valdez pitching the first complete game of his career. Career-high 114 pitches. He yielded just one run on two hits and three walks. This is great for Framber individually, just to see him develop like this, but especially with Lance McCullers Jr. being out and still no real timetable. Really good for the Stros.
I mean, you had this weekend, you had two guys taking no-hitters into the fifth inning. In both Luis Garcia and in Framber, which so to see those guys for the most part this year be on the plus side of things has been awesome. And I just want the offense to at the very least have a little more games like that, as opposed to being this offense that's middle of the pack. They're way better than middle of the pack. And I hope that Alex Bregman's right, that this all just works itself out. It's just, it's been 2 months now, and you can't put your head in the sand about it anymore.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, NFL offseason headlines. We're 100 days away from the regular season kicking off. We're going to run some headlines by you guys, and we want your opinion. Big deal or no big deal? That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling along on a Tuesday. Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes with you. Thanks for joining us. Hope everybody had a good Memorial Day weekend. We are 100 days away from the NFL regular season.
Ooh!
NFL is year-round, as we know, between the combine, the schedule release, the draft, and they find a way to make it about them again by going crazy on social media with the announcement of 100 days away, which I know Paul loves, because Paul loves...
Look, I love the NFL. They do it, overdo it a little bit with the way that they find every possible way that they can foist themselves into the conversation.
They do.
This time of year is the desert.
The desert.
It is very, very slow. But I will say that you got to give the websites who put the NFL content out credit. So, Vanessa, over the course of the last 4 days, I went on a couple of my favorite football websites, and I did some reading, but I was just looking for a headline, because now I can just skim through this website and see a couple of headlines, and I'm like, is this something? Does it jumpstart anything? No, but a lot of them are, you know, hey, there's one story, Patrick Mahomes, about a wide receiver who has 26 career catches. Things have been working really well.
Yeah.
And you just see the quote about it, and all of a sudden, like, that person's going to be the next big thing, which you won't be most likely, but you see the story, and some people get really optimistic and excited about
it. It's the opposite of when the Astros are in the World Series and the NFL season is in full swing, and you got some Rockets action about to heat up, and we have an incredible amount of content to talk about.
Yes.
We are in the opposite of that right now.
I mean, shoot.
And honestly, we're actually lucky to work in a market where the baseball team's good.
Yes. But it's funny, because there's a certain point where me whining about the Astros offense,
sure.
I mean, this is first world problems to the max. This is cake eater problems. This is ivory tower problems. This is, oh, my butler was 5 minutes late bringing me my mojito.
Us hanging out with our rich friends problems. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But there are some headlines, and I'm glad that you brought these up, because the first one is what caught my eye, because I did not know that Kanye West has a sports agency.
He does.
He has a gold
Donde.
Digger. Obviously, the line, win a Super Bowl and drive off in a Hyundai. I mean, Kanye
obviously.
West, I guess, has talked about sports, but I did not know he had a sports group. Aaron Donald, Super Bowl champ, is actually just... words are hard on a Tuesday. Aaron Donald has just signed with Donda Sports.
Right, he has.
So he bypasses Lee Steinberg and CAA and David Mulugeta, all of the typical ones for these really high-profile guys, and he believes in Yeezy.
If you have Kanye as someone in your corner for contract negotiations. Does this mean you get to have Kanye come and just be an absolute Looney Tune when he is there for said negotiations? Because that would be amazing.
Right.
Like, imagine Kanye's just getting up on the table and say, and basically say, listen, I'm the voice of a generation, and Aaron Donald, he's been playing football while I've been this voice of a generation. Did I mention I'm a voice of a generation? Sign him to a $100 million contract or something like that. I don't know. I would love to see Kanye actually be involved.
John Elway's across the table, and Kanye's like, I don't know no John Elway. I don't care about John
Who
Elway.
Who are you?
Who's John Elway?
I don't know. I've never heard of you, John Elway.
Right.
Hey, let me tell you about how I'm not mad at all at Pete Davidson anymore. I don't care about he and Kim Kardashian. But Aaron Donald, who, remember right after the Super Bowl, there was talk, oh, he's going to retire. And I guess he hasn't gotten that new contract that he has been looking for. So he was on the I Am Athlete podcast, which is, I believe, Brandon Marshall's project. And he said multiple times, I think four times over the course of the podcast, he is at peace with his career if he doesn't get a new deal. So is this a deal or is this no deal? Is Aaron Donald actually thinking about walking away?
Yeah, we want you guys' opinion on these things, by the way, if it's a big deal or not. 713-780-ESPN, of course, you can tweet us as well. I don't think it's a big deal. I will say whenever somebody says something repeatedly, it's usually not true. Like when you repeatedly say, I mean, I'm just over that girl. It's done. I don't like her that much. And then 10 minutes later, we're talking about what we ate for dinner. And you're like, I mean, I'm telling you, I really don't like her.
Yeah.
Anytime you say something that often, I think sometimes it means you're insecure about it. So I don't think it's a big deal. I do think he still wants to play. I also will say that the vibe that sometimes you get from guys who win a Super Bowl is not, I want another immediately, or we need to run it back. Sometimes they're like, bucket list, we're good. Maybe Aaron Donald is one of those guys. I don't think he is. I say no big deal.
The story,
I think he'll be back.
The story is not the retirement threat. It is that he signed with Kanye West.
Oh, big deal.
Because that means that they're trying to get that new contract. So, as far as the grand scheme of the NFL, I don't know. But, I mean, we've seen what Roc Nation and Jay-Z and what is it, LeBron? Is that the partnership? I don't even know.
It is, but Roc Nation has a really, really like professional, well thought out staff. Like Jay-Z is basically just the name behind it. Because I actually know some people that work for Roc Nation. So I don't know. Signing with Kanye West, I guess, I would say no big deal. But am I surprised that somebody that high profile is skipping the David Muligettas and the Lee Steinbergs and the CAAs and the WMEs? Yeah, I think that's a little bit odd. Said, of course, from your resident sports media nerd. All right, big deal or no big deal? Antonio Brown said he's not playing in 2022.
I mean, I wonder if this is his attempt to draw up interest in him, because we all know that he is special. Actually, he's the worst, and I'm glad that he is saying this, but I don't believe, first off, that there is zero interest in Antonio Brown. It is always, in some way, shape, or form, tempting, even if the man is going half naked in the middle of a football game and quitting on the spot. He will be, for some team, a thought towards the end of the year. And I guess I'm not sold on the idea that Antonio Brown's not playing in 2022. But I do think a lot of people are so sick of his bull. And good, because he is, again, the worst.
To me, it all came down to the fact that he screwed over Tom Brady. I think that if it had been another quarterback and another team, people would think, okay, maybe he can come back. GMs would possibly give him a chance. And you'd have some of the owners that are more brash, impulsive, shrewd, say, no, we're going to bring him in. When he screwed over Tom Brady after Tom like let him stay with him and all of that, and Tom didn't have much to say about it, because I think Brady kind of wiped his hands clean of him as well. That was the moment for me where I think that he's never going to play again. So I say no big deal.
There's no... It's really incredible that he has burned bridges with Bill Belichick, who wanted to keep him, if I'm not mistaken, but the whole Antonio Brown not able to keep his mouth shut during the investigation was why they cut him essentially a week after they had him play against the Miami Dolphins in that season opener. I think he had two touchdown catches in that game. And same thing with Tom Brady. Yeah, you're right.
Go ahead. Colin Kaepernick, quote unquote, showed impressive arm strength and conditioning at his workout. It was mostly positive reviews by the media. Has not been signed by the Raiders. Mike, Why is his name skipping me? McDaniel, right?
Josh McDaniels. Josh,
thank you. Wow, Mike McDaniels.
Mike McDaniel
is with Miami.
He's the guy that wore the wife beater underneath his shirt at the NFL team coach's photo. And it was very visible and it did not look good.
Josh McDaniels would not comment on the workout from Colin Kaepernick at all. Big deal or no big deal that Kaepernick worked out for the Raiders?
I mean, it's no big deal, and it's no big deal that he hasn't signed, and it's, I mean, not surprising either, you know? You got to wonder, like, just how interested are the Raiders? Are the Raiders doing this because they are in the midst of a workplace misconduct scandal with a fired vice president, or are they doing this because they're actually interested in having a backup for notoriously sensitive starter Derek Carr? Carr has constantly been asked about his job security over his career, and he is not one to play a poker face while he is doing it. So it's just one of those moves where you bring him in as a backup. Sorry, it's going to lend itself to the most annoying stories that you would potentially get about, hey, is Kaepernick still a starter? He hasn't thrown in the NFL in 6 years. Does he deserve an opportunity over some of the other 90 quarterbacks in the league? I'm sure he does. But it's been a long time, and I don't feel like
Five years, right?
I don't feel like he's really shown like he wants to go back into the league that much. I get the idea maybe he's owed it, but no one's owed anything in the NFL, you know? Like, go to Canada or somewhere and play there to prove that you still got it.
He had said in the past, and that's a great point, because he had said in the past that he wanted to be a starter, which I think is unrealistic for anybody.
Said it recently,
and
too.
This is no political at all. It's literally the fact that he hasn't played in 5 years. And then in the past, he had said that he wanted to be a starter. To your point, XFL, CFL,
anything.
USFL, Canada, suit up and show that you still got it. Headlines continue with ex-Texans. Justin Reed, apparently, already the leader of the Chiefs' defense. Is this surprising to you? Big deal or no big deal?
I heard that, and I took a long look at it, thinking, wait a second, is this about Andy Reed? Oh, no, that doesn't make sense because he's not a player.
Right, he is not.
Because when I see Reed and Chiefs, I just assume Chiefs. He's already a leader of the defense. I mean, that's first off, it makes me think, okay, that's not a great sign for Kansas City's defense going forward, which definitely has some issues. But the other thing is, shoot, again, why did the Texans let this guy go? If this is something that's already being discussed, and it's a bit tropey. I mean, again, this is the time of year where you see quotes that do not necessarily stay true come regular season. But this was weird. I'm already the leader of the defense, and he has this long quote about it. And I'm like, do I buy that? Like, your play does the talking. Your play is what makes a leader, not you, what you say and what you do during practices.
Justin Reed, Stanford guy, by far one of the my favorite players that I've covered. He was great with the media. I could see him coming in and being a very vocal leader, but if you haven't played a game yet in that uniform, unfortunately, I don't think you can really to say that for sure. Jadeveon Clowney, meanwhile, quote unquote, just wants to chase that Super Bowl, says that the Browns have a shot.
I wonder how much Deshaun Watson affected his desire to stay in Cleveland, but I also feel like that whatever possible long-term options he was getting, they weren't close to the one that he wanted, so he's just thinking to himself, you know what, I'm just going to continue to do this one-year contract stuff that I have been doing for the last couple of years. I mean, ultimately, you still get paid. You just hope you don't get hurt. And as someone who has had injury history like him with a lot of knee injuries, this could eventually bite him in the butt. But
he may be one of the guys that's actually okay with the one-year deal thing. Not everybody is. Not everybody likes it. And I don't know him that well. We used to work out at the same trend. I think he might be one of the guys that's genuinely like,
what kind of gym was this?
This is Plex. Danny Arnold, lead trainer at Plex.
Okay.
Owner. It's where a lot of the NFL guys work out.
I'm a flag football legend.
You are.
I mean, I got to go.
You need
there.
All the best training.
Well, sir, I mean, look, if I'm going to get back in the game,
I know.
Doing what I used to do, Vanessa.
You could probably play for the Texans.
Well, I didn't say it, but mark that down, Sean. I could probably play for the Texans. I didn't detect sarcasm there.
If Kanye West can be an agent, so can I. I will represent you.
Okay, all right. Now we go. Now there's the subtle just stab in the stomach. My hopes and dreams. Thanks.
Have you ever gotten in a fight over fantasy football? We talk about the Peterson versus Bam. Slap heard around the world. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcast. broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Every now and then, beef happens that is just so good that I think it's fake. And I thought that this was fake. I genuinely thought that it was a funny PR twist story, two guys having fun, two guys that are friends and hang out in the off season. Until there was a suspension, and I'm sure you guys have all heard this by now, it kind of came to light on Friday as the Giants were playing the Reds. Tommy Pham slaps Jock Peterson, and this is pregame, right? So this is before
the
game. It's
during batting practice.
It's during BP.
It's at the warning track of batting practice.
And if there's like two grainy Zapruder-type videos.
Yeah, you
got to
really
slap.
Look close.
I mean, you are looking close. And according to Jock Peterson, as we would find out, this is not over anything baseball related. It wasn't over anything that had to do with a girl, a shoddy that they both liked per se.
Shoddy.
This had to do with fantasy football. This is Jock Peterson.
I mean, it was over a year ago.
You didn't anticipate anything.
Yeah, it was a surprise. But
did he just come up to you, Jock, or was there like an argument before he slept?
No, there was no real argument. He kind of came up and said, like, I don't know, you remember from last year? And I was like, fantasy football? And he's like, yeah.
Where did he slept in? I mean, like,
in the cheek?
Yeah.
In the cheek.
And what did you do?
Nothing. There was a decent amount of people around, and didn't get emotional, and don't think violence is the answer, I guess you could say. So I kind of left the situation, and some other players were out there, and it, like, when bench is clear, but it was batting practice, and there was nothing more to it. Like I said, it was an unfortunate situation for over a fantasy football league rule, or wasn't a rule, and so yeah.
So Peterson said he was accused of cheating, just to explain this a little more, because he placed a player on injured reserve and replaced him with a free agent in their fantasy football league. Peterson said the player he put on IR had been ruled out for that week, which made it legal. Pham disagreed with that. That's per Jock Peterson, the pearl-wearing ex-Atlanta Brave.
This was a million years ago.
Yeah.
And that it was a year ago.
Right.
But for Tommy Pham, who is a crazy person, I think we could now officially say this, I guess, was all that occupied his mind. And if you watch the video, I mean, imagine you're at the warning track. Jock Peterson looks like he's walking away from it, and Pham just slaps him as he's walking away, and then everyone rushes in. It's nuts that this took place over, hey, the ability to use the injured list, which can be an issue from time to time in fantasy football. I would say the last 2 years with all of that's been taking place with COVID, that sometimes you'll find yourself in a league where you might need to have some extra rules in place to determine whether or not a player who has COVID, maybe the last
really
second,
astute point.
Gets put on. Well, we yeah. had the issue. We worked it out in both the leagues that I was in. And
you didn't slap anybody?
No, because we're adults. Yeah. But, I mean, yes, I say that often about myself, Vanessa. And this league had this take place a year before. Tommy Pham left the league. And he left this because it wasn't just Jock Peterson, it wasn't just about fantasy football. Peterson would go on, because he, I think, was in that moment, that was right after it took place. Imagine it's batting practice and you just got slapped over fantasy football a year ago. He had to go to his phone and actually check what happened. So when he's with reporters,
he is showing them the group chat.
Exactly. And apparently some of the issues took place because of a GIF that Jock Peterson sent to the group chat to make fun of some old San Diego Padre players, a team that Tommy Pham used to play for.
Right.
No longer is on.
This is all like ancient history stuff.
It is, but not to Tommy Pham again. Here is Jock Peterson elaborating on why Tommy, I guess, lost his mind.
There was more than one Padre. There was maybe four or five that I'm kind of close with a couple of them. And it was supposed to be a friendly thing, just making fun of they were playing bad and just talking back and forth. And, yeah, I mean, he did not like that and responded. Jock, I don't know you well enough to make any jokes like this.
Okay, so Fam does get suspended for 3 games. That was when I realized this beef was real.
Yeah.
Because it was almost too good to be true.
I don't think Peterson knew it was real until this day.
Do you all, and we want your opinion on this, certainly you can get at us at Twitch on Twitter or 713-780-ESPN. Was 3 games too much, too little, or just right?
I think it was too little.
I'm not going to lie. A slap? A physical altercation? Now, I don't know that I would go as far as Peterson saying violence is not the answer, which I think he may have said tongue-in-cheek. Three games might be too little.
This is one of the stupidest stories I can ever imagine, someone getting worked up to the point of they slap the other guy over injured list. And then he goes a little bit further, does Tommy Pham, in the press conference that he did afterwards, where he actually said, quote, "I'm a big dog in Vegas. I'm a high roller at many casinos." Apparently, he thought his money was being messed with. So here is Tommy Pham's side of it. He doesn't deny anything. He says, yeah, I slapped Jock Peterson.
I slapped Jock. I did some I don't condone, you know, so I had to address it.
What was that?
Look, you know, there's some shit that went on in fantasy, you know, but what he forgot to tell you guys too, you know, he said some disrespectful in a text message, and I called him out on it. So it was regarding, you know, my former team.
So it was, he said some stuff about...
No, I just said it plain and clear.
So I just said it plain and clear. Tommy Pham not playing around. Yeah, 3 games might not be enough for a slap, but the fact that this all happened with things that took place over a year ago, essentially, yeah, and it was so clearly a joke to probably everybody else except for Tommy Pham. Tommy Pham, there is an addiction, a gambling addiction hotline. And I'm only half joking when I say that, because maybe they have a lot of money on the line for this fantasy football league, but for him to say, don't F with my money, don't mess with my money, is weird, quite frankly.
Peterson said there was a lot of money involved, so I doubt this is like an $100 buying league or something like that. This is probably, we're probably talking at least 4 figures, if not more. Whatever the case, Tommy Pham's just a nut. He is a nut. We had a story about him a month ago. I don't even know who the hell he is.
Right.
I had never heard of him.
I've seen a little, because I used to work in Cincinnati, and I've seen people tweet about him. But to your point, yeah.
He is the circus act with the Cincinnati Reds right now, who are a garbage franchise. He is the guy that is making all the headlines by doing things like challenging Luke Voit of the San Diego Padres now to a fight at a gym that took place a month ago.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I don't like it at all. They can say what they want, you know. Everybody on that side, man, they know I get down. I know a place here. That I know an owner who let me use his gym. We need to settle anything. So they could take it whatever. That play was dirty.
It was over a slide into home plate. You could argue it was dirty. Luke Voit's a big guy. The catcher is not. Voit was out by a mile. I think it's just a victim of a guy extremely slow lumbering towards home plate. But Pham challenged him to a fight. The guy is off his rocker in one way, shape, or form. And this is just more of him being a hardo. So you've had these two things happen over the course of a month, and 3-game suspension is all you're going to do? This guy's clearly a hothead. And I got to say, considering he says, yeah, people know I get down, they know I do jiu-jitsu. Look, I'm not a fighting expert, but like his move on Jock Peterson, that slap did not really look like something that you would see out of a skilled mixed martial artist.
Have you ever met somebody that just takes themselves so seriously in every aspect of life and can't have a good time?
I know in the past I have been like that.
I didn't say it. But Tommy Pham is like that to a T. Every single media availability with reporters, he's complaining about something. And it's really not about the Reds losing, which would be a valid thing to complain about. Poor ownership in Cincinnati, totally valid. It's about fights, fantasy football leagues and slaps between him and young Jock. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about Gabe Kapler as well as the NBA Finals. But first, Paul's going to tell you about PIN.
The Passive Investor Network. It isn't toxic. It's great. You know why? Because, look, real estate prices, they're going up, they're going up, they're going up. Don't you want to make some money off of it with some real estate investing? Well, that's what my friends at the Passive Investor Network can do for you. The PIN process, passiveinvestor.net, is the website where you can get in touch with them. Look, these guys prospect the greater Houston area, and they're always on the look for the next neighborhood that is going to blow up and see housing prices jump like crazy. Did we not just see it with the Heights? And they're looking at that for you. But they're going to personalize a five-year plan for you at passiveinvestor.net. That's where you can sign up for one of their bus tours. I was on it last Saturday, and they'll take you to a bunch of different neighborhoods around Houston and tell you, hey, look, this is what is the future of this town. They got some great people involved with the entire process. And again, they walk you through it. So you can be hands-on with the real estate investing if you really want to, but why not have someone take it out of your hands that knows what they're doing, that you can trust? That's what my guys over at the Passive Investor Network can do for you. Passiveinvestor.net, passiveinvestor.net. Sign up for that bus tour.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
I love this from Todd, the show on Twitch. We were talking about this on the break. Tommy Pham going to be fighting on a Jake Paul undercard in less than 5 years. Yeah?
I could see that.
I mean, if he's not a great player in addition to causing problems repeatedly, that definitely could happen.
Honestly, it might not be a bad career path for him. I feel like he could be decent in that world, given that he knows how to generate headlines out of nothing. Right? I mean, aren't you supposed to be calling attention to yourself in some way, shape, or form?
It's a really good point. And you have to almost have a level where you do not get embarrassed because your ego is so big.
He doesn't.
That you have no shame.
I mean,
could easily see it.
You really have to have no shame for basically in that press conference saying, yeah, I slopped Jock Peterson over fantasy football. Like, I mean, he's honest. We'll give him that.
True. So everybody has a podcast now, but 10 years ago, it was everybody having a blog. And Gabe Kapler is no exception to that.
Yes.
He...
former baseball player.
He's
Giants shredded, manager. By the way. Like the most shredded coach I've ever seen in my life.
Extremely attractive.
I'm not denying it either.
Very, very attractive.
He has this insane story that he told about how he keeps his diet, but every once in a while he wants ice cream. So he'll literally like put ice cream in his mouth and then spit it out. That's
okay,
how he eats ice cream.
Could not do that. I'd rather have an uglier guy who has a dad bod than that.
He's 46.
But he is very good looking.
Those abs are ridiculous.
He's got piercing blue eyes, dark hair. Everything works.
Yeah, he's a good looking guy.
Everything
works
other than the weird diet. He did cause some headlines. He decided not to come out for the national anthem. And this was due to the shootings in Uvalde and him, you know, being vocal about not agreeing with where the country was at with gun laws, and he had used his personal blog to talk about that mass shooting.
Right. There was one line. It was, every time I place my hand over my heart and remove my hat, I'm participating in a self-congratulatory glorification of the only country where these mass shootings take place.
I thought it was a compelling line for sure, and I'm definitely all for freedom of speech, and the fact that a manager has his own blog. Dusty Baker needs a blog. Dusty Baker and his old stories about the people he used to hang out with.
He needs to have someone transcribe it for him, though.
Yeah, probably.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's on the Mavis Beacon teaches typing wavelength that your boy's on right here. Typing all those words per minute. Let's go.
But Kapler did decide to stand for the anthem on Monday, saying, "While I believe strongly in the right to protest, I believe in honoring and mourning our country's servicemen and women who fought and died for that right." I don't know that anthem protests get the attention that they used to, for better or for worse. This one caused some headlines. Thoughts, Paul?
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you on that. I mean, when it first took place with Colin Kaepernick, I remember I was at a fantasy football draft, and I saw the headline, and I was like, are you serious? Colin Kaepernick's taking a knee? This is ridiculous. Him, of all people.
But then he spoke for 18 minutes, and I actually said, okay, you know what? He has a point there. He's been a dummy before on social media. He has been a dummy afterwards with some comments that he has made, like about Fidel Castro and about how school education rates in Cuba are great. Yeah, well, it's a communist country. What do you think the numbers are going to say about stuff like that? But there was a time where, I mean, that was like the big talking point in sports. Are people kneeling or standing during the national anthem? And I think now that we have gotten removed from it, if this is the gesture that you are making to try and make some sort of political statement, I got to say, I feel like, you know, it's a little 2000 and late for that. You're trying to make something happen that happened already. You're trying to bring something back. I mean, it took him, I guess, standing for the national anthem as a headline, by the way, on Memorial Day to make me even aware of the fact
that this was happening.
That
sure.
It was happening in the first place. Yeah.
Things that still get attention. And, you know, Steve Kerr's rant and, quite frankly, very passionate rant the day of the Uvalde shootings. This was just a couple of hours after it had happened, I think, was really powerful.
His dad was killed in a shooting, too.
And
so he just wanted to speak on it.
He also listed percentages. I hate to go all stats nerd, but facts about gun violence. And background checks and whatnot that I thought was compelling, really, regardless of where you stand. So I applaud, you know, Gabe Kapler for using his right to protest, which is a part of the Constitution.
Yep.
I don't know that it gets as much attention as it used to.
I saw it and I just thought, okay, look, if we're going to do something, let's actually do something. I think we're past the point of calling attention to things. Like, this is something that we've all been aware of since the mid-90s. So at a certain point, it's not... It doesn't feel, even if it is authentic from Gabe Kapler, it almost doesn't feel as authentic as much as it feels like you're calling attention to yourself in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not suggesting that's what Kapler is doing,
sure.
But I mean, I'm at the point like this with the national anthem. Like I've been to so many sporting events, and the amount of times that I have just not paid any attention during the national anthem. What, am I supposed to stand at attention while I'm going to the bathroom or something like that? A lot of people are in lines getting like alcoholic beverages and stuff while it's taking place. I don't know. I get how everyone is entitled to their own opinion on that. But like, not only am I someone who has never really found it like that big of a deal in the first place, like now I'm like, okay, you're bringing attention to something that no longer has the swaying power that it once did. First off, to just draw attention. And second off, it doesn't do anything.
Like, which
you're,
is
you're
crazy.
Not changing anything by doing this. You're just saying, hey, look at me.
Right. When this happened with Colin Kaepernick, as you were talking about, I mean, the media networks had to figure out, are we going to talk about this? Do we stick to sports? And the same thing has continued, of course, with everything involving George Floyd and whatnot. But definitely interesting. I do wonder if others will follow suit should there, you know, God forbid, be another mass shooting. All right, Paul, you had a good time over the weekend for a lot of different reasons. One of those including the Celtics.
Yeah, the Celtics advanced to the NBA Finals. I got to say, though, between Friday, them losing, and between the longest end of game period that I could ever remember, I don't think I've ever been less happy with a win. I was just relieved. It was a 5-minute heart attack. I mean, they're up 13 with 5 to go, and I should be happy that this team that I root for that has only made the NBA Finals once in my lifetime, or excuse me, they've only made the NBA Finals, how many times is it? 3 times in my lifetime, that all of a sudden, this team is back. I should be thrilled about it. And all I could find myself, Vanessa, on Sunday was like essentially crumpling to the floor like I'm Coach K faking a back injury. It was awful. Because
Urban Meyer with another injury, ladies
yeah,
and gentlemen.
Urban Meyer down on the sidelines. Oh no, Urban. Oh no, you're going to have to take a leave of absence because of... your health. Anyway, in this situation, I like crumbled down to the ground and I couldn't. I thought Jimmy Butler hit that shot. I was just like, oh my God, it's in. So I should be happy about this, but I'm not. I'm still like, I can't believe they survived. I didn't feel happy. There was a Celtics fan across the bar. I went up, I gave him a high five, and I just said, thank bleeping God. And I just said, all right, I need to leave this TV. I don't even want to think about this game ever again. Was so stressful.
This is the revenge tour for the Boston Celtics. They fought through the Nets, Bucks, and Heat, all teams that eliminated them in the 3 past postseasons. Does that impress? That impresses me, and I'm not even a Celtics fan.
Mm.
But are you optimistic against the Warriors?
No,
because you have not been optimistic.
I haven't been optimistic at all in these playoffs.
It seems like your mindset is the psychology is not be confident, and then you're not disappointed and pleasantly surprised if they do win.
This is my life strategy, life hack. Expect the worst; you'll never be disappointed.
Love it.
Just
love
expect everything to be bad, to never go according to plan. But even with me expecting the worst and nothing to go according to plan, and not feeling confident at all with them having that 14-point lead at the end, I still was having ulcers just appear all over my body watching the end of that game. Good God.
Can Marcus Smart stop Steph Curry?
You know what? Okay, you said I thought you were going to say, can Marcus Smart stop shooting? Yes, he needs to stop shooting.
Well, we can get to that too.
I think he is good as a defender. Steph, though, I mean, he's always ready to bomb it on right in your face, and it just takes one lapse defensively for Steph to take advantage of you. It could be a three-minute stretch, and that's enough. 9 points in 3 minutes, 12 points in 3 minutes. I would like to say definitively yes, but, you know, Golden State, too, it's not all about, hey, stopping Steph. They're just so damn good at moving the ball around, and also they play competent defense on the other side of things, too. So, I mean, I hope, for the most part, that Marcus Smart will be able to stay with him, but I know he's not going to be able to do it all 48 minutes or all 44 minutes that he's on the court.
And you are hoping that he stops shooting.
Yes, he needs to stop. Oh, my God.
Focus on defense. Oh.
And look, he played really well in Game 7, and then, like, the last 2 minutes, brick, brick. It was like watching Philip Seymour Hoffman in the movie Along Came Polly. Little Ray!
White chocolate! Yeah. The best movie scenes ever. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're recapping what was a fun day for the Astros. And Emmanuel Acho, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.